the best of Battlefield Expressions.
Good morning. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. This is Senior Chief Rob Burrows. I am your host this morning, retired United States Navy Seabees, two combat tours in Iraq, and 23 years serving this nation under the United States flag for the United States Navy. And the birthday for the United States Navy is coming up this week. It is Wednesday, October 13th. And so happy birthday to all of our men and women who serve the United States Navy or who have served the United States Navy, and to our Navy across the world who is serving and protecting us right now. And for those individuals, you know, it's not just sailors on the sea. There's so many other parts of the Navy, such as the SEALs and the Seabees, who are out digging the ditches, who are out doing the special operations. The corpsmen that are out with the Marine Corps that are doing their job, just like we lost the corpsmen there in Afghanistan with the Marines. They're putting their lives on the line. They're serving this nation. We don't hear about them enough. We don't say thank you to them enough for what they do. And next month will be the Marine Corps birthday, and we'll talk about the Marine Corps then. But right now, I just want to say thank you to all the men and women who have served our nation under the flag and for the Navy for your duties. Whether you served abroad or you served at home, you wore the uniform, you continue to wear the uniform, and we thank you for your service. We thank you for the sacrifice, and we remember those who have given their lives through the years. My father was a gunner's mate on the Liberty ship during World War II. He ran the 20 millimeters and the 3-inch guns on the Liberty ships to help protect those. To his knowledge, from what he told me, that he was they had sunk a Japanese submarine in the South Pacific, and they had been, you know, attacked by kamikazes and different things like that. My father was at Nagasaki 26 days after the dropping of the bomb. He was there in Tokyo Harbor on the USS President Adams at the time that the war was ended, and he had taken some time. They had checked out some 45s. Pistols, and he and a couple of his buddies, they hopped on a train there in Tokyo Harbor and took the train into Nagasaki. And after going through some of the pictures that my mother had given me, I have the original pictures that he had taken of Nagasaki and the devastation and the damage that had been done. And those items are in the Northern California Veterans Museum as part of my family heritage back to our nation for others to see and for others to understand. And one of the things about pictures coming back from veterans from those situations, when families donate those pictures have never been published. They're not in the books. They're not in the encyclopedias because they come out of the private collections of the different family members who donate these items to the museum. And so it was always very amazing to me as we go through and we research these pictures and we look at this hand-to-hand history, the real items that take place, to be able to see those things up close and say, nobody else has ever seen this except for that veteran who served there, who took that picture, and myself or my staff. And that is a great privilege for us to be able to see those items, to preserve those items through the Museum Heritage Program, to be able to make sure that they're archived and that they're housed in our museum archive and restoration facility. And as we move forward with our project, it's actually very thrilling to me to see all the different things that are taking place. Let me tell you, it is a lot of hard work for our staff and our volunteers who step up to the plate and do all of the work behind the scenes that nobody ever sees. And so, my guest this morning is going to be John Baker, who is on our board of directors, who is one of the hardest working men I've ever known and is a great mentor to me. And so as we move forward to the program, I'll introduce him a little bit later. But once again, when these items are donated, when you donate these items to the museum, and we safeguard these items right here in Northern California, it is a privilege and an honor and a great responsibility to receive these items and to be the caretaker of American history, American heritage and to honor and to portray the lives of the men and women who serve this nation. And it, you know, it's not everybody can say that. Not everybody has that opportunity. Not everybody cares. There's so many times, we've talked about it before, where history goes in the trash can. The next generation says, we don't want this. We don't know what to do with it. They throw it on eBay or they throw it in the trash. That is a travesty to our national heritage by itself. That's a tragedy to that individual who served our nation and brought those items back. So when you're out there, if you're going through different items, if you're going through family heirlooms and things like that, and you don't know what to do with those items, please do not throw them away. Bring them to the Northern California Veterans Museum and let us store them till we open our main facility and be able to save those items, to archive them properly, to make sure that they're preserved so that we can have them for the posterity of our nation and our future generations. Ladies and gentlemen, when it's thrown away, it's gone forever. I look at these fires that are all around us, and I think to myself, the devastation and the loss of the history and the heritage of every one of those family members. They have those pictures in their homes, and they have those items from their military family members or from their own personal experiences, from their own services. And those items are gone. They're ashes and they're ashes. And that history is gone. Those stories are gone. Those items are gone. And we're losing, literally losing, our heritage just through the travesty of these fires and all the things that are gone that will never be replaced. The memories that are gone, the thoughts, the keepsakes, the items that are telling those stories, they're just gone. And it's not just about military. It's about our American heritage. It's about all of the things from the families from the 1800s and the 1700s. Whether it be coins or paper or documents or anything like that, the letters and things. And so, once again, if you have the opportunity, all of the firearms, the antique firearms and swords and bayonets and everything else that have been lost to this tragedy of these fires in our community and all throughout California, every time something is burned and lost, it's gone forever. And if it's gone forever and nobody remembers, then nobody can recall those items. Nobody can be able to pass that on, to share that for future generations. It's one of the reasons that the Northern California Veterans Museum is so important as we continue to move forward. It has been a fantastic week for the Northern California Veterans Museum. The state of California Water Department, California Department of Drinking Water, has authorized our well at the museum property, which is just a major step. It's been 3 years coming for this process of getting the well authorized, our water authorized, as we move forward. And Shasta County came out, Environmental Health, and did a preliminary inspection. And the well has been passed. We're waiting for a couple more items and things to take place for us to be able to get our permit. But now Shasta County is preparing to permit our well as we move forward. And this has been a major hurdle of getting our own water. We had to approach the city of Anderson to see if they were going to support us with municipality water, and they denied the Northern California Veterans Museum. They said they're not coming up the hill where we're at, therefore we were on our own. We applied to the Cottonwood Water District, to their municipality, and they denied us. It took a year for them to deny us through the COVID because they only met every other month with their board. And so 3 weeks ago, we were denied from the Cottonwood Water District. And so we took all that back to the state of California, and they said, well, that's what we wanted to hear from the different organizations, but we had to get it from the word of those different organizations that they were going to deny the museum municipality water. So the state of California said, you've done everything that we asked you to do. Your water checks out good. The tests work out good. So we're going to authorize you the use of a private well for public use. And that's what the biggest thing is the state of California changed the law that you have to meet all these other requirements for a private well for public use. And so we have been jumping through hoops. We have been working our proverbial butts off to get the well maintained as far as the exterior of the housing and the wellhead. And part of our well building burned during that last fire we had in May on Memorial Day. And so we had to rebuild portions of that and to pour concrete for taking care of the protection of the well area and to move dirt away from the landslide area. And so we still have a little bit more dirt work to do and some other items that need to be finalized. And then we're going to have that permit for our water system. And then the next one is the permit for our septic system, which has basically been approved except for some final details. And then our use permit. Believe me, this has been a hard, uphill, rough road. We've been marching, but we're making it. We're doing it. We're seeing success in the community as we continue to move forward and bring this museum to Northern California. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions.
Your friendly oil change. Premier in all we do.
Premier Oil Change has been locally owned and operated since we opened in 2006, enjoying long-term relationships with our team members and loyal guests. Many of our team members have worked with us for over 10 years. Many of our certified technicians have logged over 30,000 oil changes, working on hundreds of different vehicle makes and models. In an ever-changing world, we strive to keep up with change with our extensive training program. It's important to the staff at Premier Oil Change that our customers' cars are well taken care of by experienced, well-trained technicians. So you can depend on your vehicle to get you and your family to your destination. Don't forget that you can earn free oil changes with Premier Rewards. Learn more at PremierOilChange.com or visit us in Palo Cedro. Premier is in the Holiday Market Shopping Center or in Redding on Lake Boulevard next to Waterworks Park or our newest location in Anderson across from Roundtable. Remember, you get a free car wash with every oil change. Premier Oil Change, home of the friendly oil change.
Good morning, Redding. This is Rick Hughes, host of The Flatline. Heard every Sunday morning on KCNR 96.5 FM at 7 a.m. in the morning. Just want you to know that God has given us two ends, one to think with and one to sit on. And success in life depends on which one you use. It's heads you win and tails you lose. Come join me on The Flatline and learn about God's tremendous problem-solving device. 7 a.m. every Sunday morning, 96.5 FM, KCNR.
This is the best of Battlefield Expressions.
If tomorrow all the things were gone I'd worked for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife, thank my lucky stars to be living here today, where the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away. And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free, and I won't forget the man who died, who gave that right to me. And I'll gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today. 'Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA. Yeah. From the lakes of Minnesota to the hills of Tennessee.
across the plains of Texas, oh, from sea to shining sea.
From Detroit down to Houston and New York to L.A.,
where there's pride in every American heart,
and it's time we stand and say,
good morning. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. Once again, Senior Chief Rob Burrows here with us this morning from the United States Navy Seabees retired. And let me tell you what the motto for the Seabees is. The motto for the Seabees is, the difficult we do today, the impossible takes a little longer. And that's how it was all around the world when we served all around the world. We went in there, we took care of the difficult things immediately because we could handle those. They were tough, but we got in there and we got it done. And the impossible things we kept working on. It takes perseverance, it takes tenacity, it takes, blood, broken bones, sweat, tears, you name it. It takes all those things. And then we bring that attitude back home, and as we're working in a community, I've told many people I would have never thought that it would take this much work to honor our veterans in the United States, as it has for us to be able to put together this museum to honor the men and women who serve this nation. When we were out at the Reading Airport, it was a very difficult time. We've just fought the bureaucracy with the city of Reading and everything, just one thing after the next. It was obvious they didn't want the Veterans Museum in Reading, California. We moved to Anderson. We worked with Anderson. There were some hiccups. We were able to take care of those and continue to get our building together and make that happen. And then now that we're working in Shasta County, the state of California and Shasta County have been working with us. Many of those details we've just had to go through, the steps of making all of those things come together. But you can't give up. It's difficult. It's tough. There's discouraging days. There's days you shake your head. There's days that are dark and you think to yourself, this is never going to happen. But you don't give up. You just put one foot in front of the other and tomorrow's another day. And that's what we've been doing with this entire program. That's what we have to do with our own lives, our personal lives. You know, it just seems like all the doors are closed, the windows are closed, there's no way out, things aren't just going to happen. But, you know, let me tell you, before, when I was in Iraq with our convoy missions, I used to walk around my convoy trucks and pray for them before we stepped out on a mission. Because I knew that I could not do it on my own. If God was going to bring us through that night and through those missions, it was going to be God and not me. And so it was critical. Many times my guys say, hey, Chief, what are you doing? I said, I'm just walking around the vehicles, just make sure everybody's good to go. And that's what I was doing. I was walking around our vehicles praying that we were good to go, putting it in God's hands, not mine, because my hands are weak, but his are strong. And so that's how it is with this entire museum project, is to honor the sacrifice of the men and women who served our nation, who continue to serve our nation. God's sacrifice for us, as our men and women serve for our freedom, God's sacrifice for our salvation. And there's times when I walk around that entire museum property and it's like, okay, it's not my property, it's yours, God. It's your hand, it's your time, it's your deal. I'm just here to help move it along. I'm a tool in the process of making this happen. And so I give the Lord his thanks for his grace, and I thank him for helping us to move along. It's not my timing, it's his timing. And that is one of the most difficult things for me to understand in my life, is that it doesn't matter what Rob Burrows wants. What matters is when it's God's time, and God will just make it happen. And so I just have to thank him for the blessings that he gives to us, and thank him for the strength and the courage, because there's many days when I don't have strength or courage to move forward. I just want to kick the bucket and just say, I'm done with this. But you can't do that. You have to just continue to move forward. You have to look for strength from another source, which is not myself, because, boy, there's days when I'm just done. But God has been there and given us the strength. He's given us the vision, and he's helping us move this project forward, because we have to honor our men and women who serve this nation. We cannot forget that sacrifice. When I was in Iraq, there's several different times when we had to put military personnel in body bags because of IEDs, because of sniper fire, just because of war. And it's tough. But you can't stop. You can't stop when things get tough. That's when you have to pick yourself up and you have to keep pushing along to make things happen. Like I said, this was a really good week for the museum. Last Sunday, we had the Iron Soldier Ride at Yamaha Sea-Doo up there with Steve and Paula McCarley and their crew. And we were able to raise over $20,000 for Homeward Bound Military Family Support Services. And so I cannot say thank you to individuals in our community who step up and to help support the museum and our programs for our military families, young and old, that do this out of their own compassion for our community and compassion for our veterans. And so once again, I say thank you to them for their hard work. Thank you to all of the motorcycle riders that were there who participated, and they donated, and they were part of the program because they believe in our veterans. It's veterans helping veterans. Many of those that were on the ride were veterans that were riding, that were there, that they're part of that program. And to those companies and businesses in our community who donate to this program, whether it be a dollar or it be $3,000, we thank every single one of you who pulls that money out of your pocket and donates it to the program. And we want to remind you that Homeward Bound is a program, the museum, all of our programs, nobody gets paid. It is literally a labor of love. The men and women who volunteer hours and hours, lots of sweat, lots of tears, lots of heartache, because we're all just, you know, it's a tough road. Especially when you're doing it out of your heart sometimes, because you got to reach down deep. And they're never short hours. They're always long hours. But that's what makes it worth the while, when we can take care of others and know that the program is working and that people help to generate funds to donate to that. This week, the Northern California Veterans Museum received an $8,000 grant from Weyerhaeuser Timber and Lumber Corporation. And so to once again come back and to be with the museum, to work with the museum in the preservation of all the different things that are taking place, and to help our elderly veterans and widows in our program, and then also, once again, to help Homeward Bound. These companies, these corporations, when we ask for these grants, when we supply for these grants, and they choose us, that's a great responsibility, because now we have to watch every dollar as we expend it. We have to watch those families to make sure that we take care of them properly and to reach out and to do that. But it builds confidence in us, because those corporations have faith in our program, and they have faith in what we're doing, and that we're going to do the right thing with those funds. And so those things are so important as we continue to move forward in our community and to be able to take care of them. The continuation of the COVID and all the different things, there's enough issues in life as it is, let alone adding COVID to it, that we have been given the opportunity to reach out in our community and to be a light in the dark area and to support our community, our veterans community, and to make sure that we take care of them after they have served our nation and served faithfully. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions.
slow down.
Hi, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt. My chiropractic and nutrition practice in downtown Reading has been helping people feel better for over 20 years. We pride ourselves in really listening to our patients and then tailoring a program of nutrition, chiropractic care, massage, and exercise that's just right for you. The results can be dramatic. Call 244-7873. That's 244-7873. Thank you.
When people ask me for a recommendation for a heating or air conditioning company, I always say Alliance Heating and Air. Why? Well, they've been taking care of our HVAC system for 14 years. Professional, friendly, and willing to go to the extra step for their customers. I have found no problem too difficult or too minor for them to repair. I recommend Alliance Heating and Air with no reservations. You can reach them at 530-221-2642 or online at homecomfort.org. And they have 24/7 emergency assistance. Alliance Heating and Air.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
This is the best of Battlefield Expressions.
Morning, you're listening to Battlefield Expressions, and that fanfare is for our guest this morning, which is John Baker. John Baker is a Korean War Air Force veteran. He has been on the board of directors for the Veterans Museum since 2009. Since almost the very beginning of the program, John has been a part of the program. He has been committed to the task He has been supportive through all of the different programs that we have done. John has been a true mentor to me with his tenacity. He's a very quiet, very unspoken individual, but John is there all the time. He's one of the hardest working men I've ever met. He should have been a CB, not an Air Force guy. Because the man is in his late 80s and he outperforms me when we're out working in the field some days. And it's just amazing that he has the strength and the personal tenacity to do the things that he does. His heart is always in the program and working things along, and he's been involved throughout the community as long as I've known him. And John, it's just a privilege to have you here this morning and an honor to know you. Thank you for your service. And thank you for everything that you do for the Veterans Museum. Thank you for your example, for your hard work, and thank you for being committed to help and honor other veterans. And so, once again, I was talking earlier about days when I get discouraged and everything else. It's like, you're just worn out from all the hours of work and pushing and things that happen and things that don't happen. And you're always there. You're a silent majority. As far as that mentorship and being there as an encouragement. There's times you come to the board meetings and you don't say a word all night. But I know that you're there because you care. And you're there because you're part of the program, that you want this to be a successful program. And so I just want to say thank you again for everything that you do for the Veterans Museum and for our veterans in our community. So good morning. After all that. So, John, we want to talk a little bit about your Air Force duty when you served during the Korean War. We want to talk about what some of the influence were. I know that you were not drafted at that time, so you volunteered. And we want to know some of those influences that brought you into the Air Force and some of the stories that you want to tell about when you first went in with the boot camp and where you served.
Well, like I was telling Rob earlier, I was kind of bashful all through high school, and they always wanted me to get up and speak in class, and I didn't want to. So on the day I was 17, I decided to join the Air Force to get out of there because I hated high school. And the influence was really, my dad was a manager of a big grocery store in Orangeville. I was born in Sacramento and grew up in Orangeville, and it's right between McClellan Air Force Base and Mather Air Force Base. So I knew all these officers would come in the store, and my dad would have them at the house for dinner a lot. And this one couple, her parents were from London, and they came over, and they were all at the house one night. And I joined the day I was 17, and I went to, they shipped me to Lackland Air Force Base in San Antonio for 13 weeks of training. And when I got out of that, I went to Aircraft and Engine School at Wichita Falls, Texas, and I was there for 7 months, and I went to Westover Air Force Base in Chicopee Falls, Massachusetts. I worked on DC-4s or C-54s for a couple of years, I guess. Then from there, they shipped me to Korea. And I was based in Busan for a while. And then from there, they shipped me to Miho Air Force Base, and I was started test hopping B-26s out of battle damage because it was a repair station for all the B-26s that were battle damaged.
And the B-26, is that the Marauder?
Well, it's like a Marauder. It's the Douglas version of it.
Of the Marauder?
Yeah.
So when you were a kid and you were there between McClellan and Mather, you saw every World War II airplane that was flying at that time fly directly over your head.
Pretty well.
So you saw P-51 Mustangs and B-17s. And
B-24s.
24 Liberators. And P-47 Thunderbolts and P-39 Warhawk, Air Cobras. I mean, that just had to be an influencer by itself to sit out there and to watch all of those World War, I mean, those big engines screaming over as they were taking off and landing.
I had a cousin that designed a bomb, like a Norden bomb site, And it was all top secret. He had it in his garage, and he was trying to sell it to the government, but they went with the Norden bomb site. So that was interesting.
So you were able to see that at the very beginning.
Yeah.
So it was top secret, and he had it in his garage.
Yeah.
But nobody knew about it except individuals like yourself. Well, it had to start somewhere. I mean, if they didn't have the opportunity other places, I mean, it's like many businesses that are starting somebody's garage and you just keep the door down and keep it quiet. So
I don't know why they didn't take it, but they went with the Norden anyway.
Well, obviously they felt that it wasn't as top secret as the Norden was.
Yeah.
Well, what was the deal with the Norden? The Norden side, they said that you could hit a picker barrel at, 15,000 feet?
Pretty well.
So it was that accurate.
Yeah.
Although there's many times that we watched the different bombing when they're doing the aerials, and they're still, they're hitting everywhere except for the city, but they're hitting all around the city. It was always pretty interesting how those bombs drop like that.
You get in the clouds and the wind, like when they went over Tokyo, get high winds over there, you just take the bombs off somewhere else.
Just push them all over the atmosphere till they hit the ground.
Yeah.
So when you were getting ready, when you were in boot camp at Lackland, tell us some of the things that took place while you were at Lackland. Some of the things that, because you were a quiet individual, did they make you talk when you were going through boot camp?
Not too much. We marched a lot, I remember, and went on the gun range and then went through a gas chamber thing. Had to put our masks on and take them off when they put the gas going through. Had to hold your breath for a couple of minutes. And
CS gas, riot gas. In Navy Seabees for 23 years, I went through the gas chamber 12 times. And so it's like, well, you have to requalify every 24 months. Or you have to go through the chamber before you deploy. Yeah. So it didn't matter whether it was last week or a year ago, if you had to do it, they made you do it again. And you got to the point where, okay, we're going to go through the gas chamber, but I hated it every time.
Yeah. We only had it once. Basic training was all.
So, what were some of your schools like when you were you working on jet engines? Were you working on airplane engines or reciprocal engines?
Well, I went through A&E school. It was all recips. And when I was at Westover, I went to Rantoul Air Force Base out of below Chicago, and I worked on went to school for a J-47 engine. It was a jet engine that was for the F-86. But I never worked on another jet engine. The rest of the time I was in the Air Force, it was all B-26s.
So basically you just went through it during school.
Yeah, 30-day school.
We're coming up on a break right now. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. Our guest is John Baker, Korean War veteran, and we will be right back.
Are you not getting treatment for a work injury because of denials? Call me, Patrick Gorman, attorney at law, at 530-262-2168, and I will get you results. The insurance company and your employer have an attorney working hard for them. You need somebody fighting for you. When you call Gorman Law, you're going to speak with me, not a paralegal, because the last thing you should be worried about is whether or not your attorney is working for you. There is no cost until your case is settled. Consultations are free and confidential. Call today, 530-262-2168. That's 530-262-2168.
At Shasta Regional Medical Group, we're focused on the health matters that matter to you, like having a primary care doctor you trust. Our physicians put patients first They take the time to listen to your needs and concerns, and they provide the information you need to make good decisions about your own health. At Shasta Regional Medical Group, you have an integrated network of caregivers and specialists working to serve you in a compassionate, patient-centered environment. We're conveniently located right across the street from Shasta Regional Medical Center. To make an appointment, call Shasta Regional Medical Group today at 605-4260 or visit us online at ShastaRegionalMedicalGroup.com. Shasta Regional Medical Group. Your primary care is our primary concern.
A building that's meant to last is not built overnight. And for centuries, the cornerstone has been crucial to guide each brick and wall that comes after. A strong community relies on many cornerstones. So at Cornerstone Community Bank, we've taken our name to heart. Whether it's your business or your family, we'll provide the financial cornerstone that you need to build on. We're local. We're community. We're your cornerstone. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Hey friends, this is RC with Tobacco and Brew. Today we're talking about the Fugly from Tabacalera El Artista. Coming in a 5x40 Vitola, the Fugly is priced just right for our value-conscious customers. Draped in a chocolatey brown San Andres leaf, presented in natural or Maduro, this stick is a throwback to a Cheroot vintage. The Fugly from Tabacalera El Artista, Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
This is the best of Battlefield Expressions.
He came home to Tennessee, a young man at the end of 45. Only one of seven men in his platoon that made it back alive. He must have seen some tough times, but he never talked too much about all that. Put his pictures and his memories in the cedar chest. Everything but his old army hat. By the time I graduated, the winds of change had blown across our land. They were burning flags and draft cards when they bothered to take some kind of stand. And we used to laugh at Grandpa like he was some old relic from the past. 'Cause he never left the house unless he was wearing that funny looking worn out army hat. Every eye was on him anytime that he went anywhere. They whispered and they pointed, but you could tell that Grandpa didn't care. I ain't wearing this for them, he said. It's a whole lot more than that. For my buddies who gave everything, the least that I can do is keep on wearing this old army hat. He called me up one morning, said he'd seen it on the news on his TV. They've opened up a monument to World War II in Washington, D.C. I'm getting any younger, and I wish someone would take me to see that. I couldn't help but think they're gonna laugh at you up there if you show up in that silly army hat. Two strangers both saluted as Grandpa walked up to the monument. One said, "Thank you, soldier, for a job well done." The other said, "Amen." And a young boy said, "Sir, my daddy went to war and never made it back. Would you take a picture standing here beside me and maybe let me wear your army hat?" Every eye was on him, and there was not a dry one in the crowd. They whispered and they pointed, stood up extra tall and proud. He said, son, just keep it. When the young boy tried his best to give it back, you're a brave little soldier, son, and every soldier needs his very own authentic army hat. For your daddy who gave everything, the least that I can do is pass on this old worn-out army hat.
Good morning. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions, and that took place at the World War II Memorial when we were taking all of the World War II veterans and Korean War veterans back to see the monument and the World War II Memorial there. If you never had an opportunity to be there, it's one of the most beautiful sights in all of our nation. Able to take you back there too, and you were able to be a part of that program, and it was it's really hard to describe sometimes unless you've been there. And you can look at pictures of it, and pictures are beautiful. But when you walk out there on the memorial and you feel the cool air blowing across the granite, and you listen to the silence and the people that are walking around, and you listen to the water as it falls and echoes off the granite, and it's just the sky is blue and the clouds are wisping as they blow over Washington, D.C. there. And it's just, the marble is white, and the sun glistens off of all of the marble that's there. And it's just, it's so picturesque, but when you're there, you just feel, it has a feeling of its own. And when you read the names, and you see what took place there, and you see, the veterans that are there, and some are in wheelchairs, and some are with canes, and some are walking, and the families that are there with them. What an honor and what a tribute it is to say thank you to our veterans. And whether it didn't matter what veteran you were when you were there. It was a World War II memorial, but it honored all of our veterans who serve our nation. And once again, John, an opportunity. This morning, John Baker is my guest, Korean War veteran. A thank you to you for your service. We're talking about the aircraft that you were working with and flying with, which was the B-26. And I thought you were as a flight crew mechanic, but I didn't realize you were actually a flight crew kind of a co-pilot on the B-26. Tell us a little bit about being the co-pilot and the engineer on the 26. I know that you did some combat missions, and talk to us a little bit about that experience if you can. I know it's a lot to throw out there.
Well, in 1950, they lost so many aircraft that they were flying daylight missions, and they had to go to nighttime missions, and they call them nighttime, I've forgotten, nighttime marauders or something. But they lost so many aircraft that they went to nighttime so that we could fly. We'd look for lights, like trains going up through tunnels. They'd hide in tunnels. If you could catch them before they got in there, you could strafe them or bomb them.
Those were called midnight marauders, weren't they? Midnight marauders?
Yeah. And I was on a couple of pictures. They're in the museum somewhere. Christine filed them away, but we dropped fragmentation bombs. And they would drop down, and they would explode at different heights. And I've got pictures of those dropping down at crossroad. We'd bomb the road so they couldn't go that way.
Right.
One night, one of the bombers took off from K-9 Busan, and it had a full load of bombs, and it got out maybe 1,000 yards out, and it just exploded. There was nothing left. You couldn't find anything.
The aircraft.
Yeah.
Did they ever know what caused it?
No. It was gone.
One of those freak accidents.
Yeah.
I know that I had talked with another World War II navigator who actually was a bombardier on a B-17, and they were flying out of New Guinea. And they would fly out of Brisbane and then bomb over New Guinea in that area in the South Pacific. And they had a brand new crew had come in on a B-17. It was their first mission out. And as they were flying down the runway getting ready to take off, they hit a kangaroo at the end of the runway. And it blew out one of the tires, and the whole B-17 crashed and burned at the end of the runway. Mm-hmm. Brand new crew. None of them were over the age of 24 years old, 11 men. And so tragedy strikes and tragedy happens, and who knows the reason why something like that happens and takes place. 11 men, brand new crew, first Virgin flight, and they hit a kangaroo on the runway. And it takes all their lives. And that's how it was in Iraq also. There was things like that. War is hell.
Yeah, we lost a few. They hit mountains. In fact, a couple of our commanders, they had to get so many flight hours to get paid. So they'd go up and take a mission. We lost a few of them like that. They'd hit a mountain.
And that was in the North Korea area.
Yeah.
So that was at night because there was no, I mean, if it didn't show it on the map or you were off a few degrees.
Yeah.
You weren't flying through a valley. You were flying right across the peaks.
Yeah, they weren't that active. They only go up for, say, 4 or 5 hours a month, you know, to get their time in.
How many missions did you end up flying while you were there?
Probably only about 15, because then they shipped me to Miho Air Force Base in Japan, and I started test hopping battle damaged B-26s out of the repair station.
Were there any missions when you were flying in Korea that seemed to stand out more than others?
Probably the daylight one where we dropped the fragmentation bombs and we could see them exploding all over the place.
Well, yeah, I mean, we talked about being a target. Did you ever take flak in your aircraft or enemy fire?
Yeah. We had holes in them every once in a while. You wouldn't see them, but you get back and you find holes in the airplane.
Thank you, John, for your service. You know, there's so many times that we have individuals who serve with us and around us, and we never know completely what the story is or where you've been or what you've done. Thank you for putting your life in harm's way for us when you served. How old were you at that time? 20?
I turned 19 in February when I got over there, so yeah, I was 19 most of the time I was there.
All right, we're going to get ready to take a break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions.
Well, if you ask me where I come from, here's what I tell everyone.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center. Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
In the Northeast, residents being urged to stay off the roads in the aftermath of that major winter storm. Forecaster Rich Otto with the National Weather Service.
Daytime temperatures don't look to get above freezing again until maybe during the day on Sunday.
That storm spread misery all the way from the deep south up through the Northeast. Iowa Representative Ashley Hinson is pushing back against the Biden administration's secret nighttime flights to transport illegal aliens into all parts of America.
The administration needs to be held accountable because they are jeopardizing the safety and security of our communities.
Hinson has introduced the Stop the Betrayal Act that would put an end to taxpayer-funded flights and bus transports for illegals. Republican Senator Tom Cotton says he doubts he'll be able to support President Biden's Supreme Court nominee given his review of dozens of other picks for the lower courts.
You view the Constitution not as a constraint on government power.
Senator Cotton was interviewed by the Salem Radio Network. News Corp says it was a target of a Chinese hack.
The publisher of the Wall Street Journal said Friday it was hacked and data was stolen from journalists and other employees. According to News Corp, a cybersecurity firm investigating the intrusion has determined Chinese intelligence gathering to be behind the operation. Citing people briefed on the matter, the Wall Street Journal reports the intrusion appears to date back to February 2020. News Corp also publishes the New York Post, and it owns Wall Street Journal parent Dow Jones. The revelation coincided with the opening of the Winter Olympics in Beijing.
That is correspondent Mike Grazia. More from townhall.com.
If you are a man over 40, listen up, because this could impact how much you're getting done during the day and at night. The harsh reality is, once you hit 40, your body has less free testosterone. Here's the good news. Nugenix, the number one selling testosterone booster at GNC, has changed the game again for men over 40 with Nugenix Total T, their most powerful man-boosting formula ever, and guys all over America are raving about it. Jeremy P. says, this is the best product I've found to raise T levels. I plan on using the product for the rest of my life. And how about Shane D? He says, I had no drive and was tanked out at the end of the day. After 3 months, my energy level is through the roof. I work out like most 19-year-olds. I am 47. Guys over 40, you need Nugenix Total T. And right now, you can get a complimentary bottle. Just text KING to 42424. It's the number one selling free testosterone booster at GNC. But you can only get your complimentary bottle by texting KING to 42424. That's K-I-N-G to 42424. Text KING to 42424.
A Tennessee man has been found guilty on all counts for killing four people at a Waffle House in 2018.
Travis Ranking appeared calm, glancing toward his parents as a jury in Davidson County, Tennessee, rejected his insanity defense, taking just 4 hours to hand down a guilty verdict on four counts of first-degree murder and 12 related charges.
For the offense of premeditated first-degree murder, guilty.
The 33-year-old was naked except for a green jacket when he gunned down four people and injured several others at the Waffle House in Antioch, Tennessee in April of 2018.
That's correspondent Jennifer King. SpaceX and NASA are now investigating a parachute issue that took place on the last two capsule flights. One of the four main parachutes was slow to inflate during the return of four astronauts to Earth last November. In both cases involved, the sluggish parachute eventually opened and the capsules did manage to splash down safely off the coast of Florida. Breaking news and analysis at townhall.com. If you're a student in New York City public schools, you'll be going vegan.
New York City public school students will shift to vegan Fridays in school cafeterias. The move was pushed by the city's new mayor, Eric Adams, who follows and promotes a plant-based diet that he credits for improving his health. Vegan options are already available in all schools every day, but starting Friday and continuing weekly, the lunch offering will be vegan. Students can still request a non-vegan option, according to the city's Department of Education.
That is Keith Peters reporting. Authorities in Austria are warning of what they call considerable risk of avalanches in the west part of the country after nine people were killed in a 24-hour span, including four Swedish citizens and their Austrian guide. They died in an avalanche near the Austrian-Swiss border. And today, authorities in Tyrol reported the death of one person near a village in an avalanche. A second person still missing in that case. More of these stories at townhall.com.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
This is the best of Battlefield Expressions.
Oh, I have slept the surly bonds of earth and danced the skies on laughter-silvered wings. Sunward I've climbed and joined the tumbling mirth of sun-split clouds and done 100 things you have not dreamed of. wheeled and soared and swung high in the sunlit silence. Hovering there, I've chased the shouting wind along and flung my eager craft through footless halls of air. Up, up the long, delirious, burning blue, I've topped the windswept heights with easy grace, but never lark nor even eagle flew. And while with silent, lifting mind, I've trod the high, untrespassed sanctity of space, put out my hand and touched the face of God.
Good morning. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions, and that poem that was just read is called High Flight. And that is about flying a jet aircraft up into the sky and being able to just have the freedom of spinning the aircraft and, like it said, climbing through columns and columns of clouds up in the air where, once again, those that have the opportunity to fly, there's a totally different world out there than anybody else knows. And when you're a pilot and you fly, and you have the control of that aircraft to go pretty much wherever you want to go, altitude wise, otherwise, used to be you could do pretty much anything you wanted to. Now the sky is more regulated than it ever has been before. And so I'm a fixed wing and a helicopter pilot. And so it's much easier to fly the helicopter because you can go low altitude and go pretty much anywhere you want. But when you lift off the ground and you're the pilot, you're the PIC, and or you're in a second seat and you feel the gravity go away and now you're weightless in the aircraft as you're flying, there's an experience being in the front seat that has nothing to do with being a passenger in the back seat. Totally different world, totally different mindset. And when you look down and you see the world from a higher altitude and look over the valleys and down over the mountain peaks and everything else, those people, they drive their cars and all they see is a mountain peak or a valley. They see a house or a building. They never see what's on the horizon. And I think that that's one of the greatest things that becoming a pilot and flying is that the horizon goes and goes and goes forever. And when you're in the front seat and you're looking out and you're seeing that horizon as you're flying, it brings a whole different world to you than an individual who never gets a chance to be in the front seat of an aircraft. So, John, being the co-pilot and the flight crew of the B-26, when you were flying over Korea, I know that when I was in Korea, a lot of Korea looks kind of like the coastal range in California. I mean, it's low rolling mountains and a lot of scrub oak and little valleys and ravines and things like that. Was there ever any experiences or things? I know you did a lot of night missions, but when you were in Korea doing the bombing runs, can you see the enemy on the ground?
Not really.
What kind of altitude were you guys flying at?
Oh, jeez. Well, a couple of pictures I have that we were just 500 feet off the ground.
Oh, a lot of low level.
Yeah.
Well, and that's true because the higher you are, the greater the target.
Yeah.
So that must have been an e-ticket ride when you were flying low level like that. What did you guys do? Probably about 200 knots?
I think, I forget where we were redlined at 375, I think. So
375 probably, at 500 feet.
That's the red line where you didn't go over that.
Right.
So maybe 200.
Yeah, 200 to 300 knots.
Yeah.
Flying at about 500 feet off. There's no other experience in the world like that.
Yeah.
So you're on top of your target in a matter of seconds.
Yeah. I remember that when I came back, when I was stationed at Luke, we flew around the United States quite a bit, and I always hated to go through the San Bernardino Pass, the mountains there, and also El Paso. You could look down and see all the little airplanes just dotted down to the, never made it.
Oh, on the mountainside.
Yeah.
Wow.
I hated to go through the clouds because you never knew what mountain's going to come up at you. And you go through those passes and you see all those little airplanes down, still down there.
That's Conejo Pass, crashed. Wasn't it? Was that Conejo or is that San Bernardino? Was that that was the large pass out there by Palm Springs?
Yeah.
That big, tall mountain range down through there.
Yeah.
That flung through there also, but it was during the day. So you didn't have your aircraft at that time in 1950s. The B-26 didn't have a lot of navigation equipment on it for flying at night?
I mean, no,
at
they,
that time it was ADF, wasn't it? I mean, it was automatic direction finder off of radio signals from a radio station.
Yeah. They started putting navigators on when we went to nighttime because they didn't know where they were going.
It makes it kind of tough if the pilot doesn't know. Well, it's hard enough to fly at night anyway,
yeah,
keeping it straight and level, and then trying to look at the maps at the same time. I mean, that's always been a real challenge for me, flying at night with the maps. Now it's just all GPS. You just follow the GPS. It tells you your altitude, and it gives you a line to fly.
Yeah.
But when I first started flying also back in the 70s, it was, you know, you had the map in your lap. You had a red light, and you're looking down and watching your instruments. You're looking down watching your instruments, and, you know, it's really, really easy to become disoriented in an aircraft at night during those older days, especially since there was such simple instruments. There was nothing that was sophisticated. They were just coming out with IFR, which is instrument flight rules, and ILSs, instrument landing systems, and things like that. So
they went to an Omega navigation, too, later. They had, like, three main stations. One was Honolulu, where they'd have a tower, and a couple other places. But if you, like, you're flying into Anchorage, right at dusk, at nighttime, it calls the diurnal shift. You'd be off about 15 miles.
15 miles because of magnetic interference.
Yeah. So they'd write it up, and then you go check it out and couldn't find nothing wrong. So.
Because the magnetism up there changes for true north. Yeah, I could see how that would be a problem. That would be really easy to be that far off and to hit a mountain or something like that in that area.
Then they went to INS, so that was pretty accurate.
You know, people don't understand the history of aviation and how dangerous it was in the very beginning. It wasn't just barnstorming. It was there was no equipment. Yeah. It was you flew literally by the seat of your pants. Even flying where you were flying, if the pilot didn't have your pilots didn't have good sense of where they were and the altitudes and things like that, it was literally flying by instinct in the seat of their pants.
Yeah.
Did you guys have some close experiences when you were flying in Korea?
Not too much. Just you wouldn't see the fire until you got back. You'd see the holes in the airplane, but you never see anything.
They were just probably shooting from the hip because they could hear you but not see you.
Yeah.
So what did you do when you finally got out of the Air Force?
Let's see. Oh, I tried to get on Mather Air Force Base as a mechanic, but they weren't hiring. And then German aircraft mechanics only making $2.50 an hour at that time.
$2.50. You know, when was that? 1954?
Yeah, 54.
$2.50 an hour.
So I went to work on the Folsom Dam. I got on there with on a wagon drill, the chuck tender. And I worked there till Sierra College opened up for the year. And I went to college for 2 years at Sierra College in Auburn. And in the summertime, I worked up at Lake Tahoe as a tree trimmer, topping trees around lodges and stuff. And after that, I went to work for the state for 9 months. We drilled holes all around the delta. Went down 20 to 30 feet down to hard sand through
all the muck.
Muck and peat moss and stuff. And then I guess after that, I moved up to Bernie. My mother and dad had moved up to Bernie, and so I moved up there to where they were at, and I went to work for the sawmills for a couple of years and met my wife up there.
Marty.
We moved to Redding for a couple of years, and then I decided to go down. Some of my friends were working on the BART tunnel, and I was going to go down and see if I could get on with them, and they weren't hiring, so I saw an ad in the paper for SFO helicopters, and I was heading for there. And before I got to them, World Airways hangar was there, so I stopped in there, and they hired me. And I went from there for 35 years. Stayed with them about 4 years, and then I worked at different airlines because, well, the airlines, vice presidents and directors and all of them, they moved a lot around a lot to different good jobs they could find.
Hold that thought, John. We're going to take a break. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. We'll be
Hi, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt. My chiropractic and nutrition practice in downtown Reading has been helping people feel better for over 20 years. We pride ourselves in really listening to our patients and then tailoring a program of nutrition, chiropractic care, massage, and exercise that's just right for you. The results can be dramatic. Call 244-7873. That's 244-7873. Thank you.
The YMCA is welcoming new members to come and enjoy the many choices the YMCA has to offer. The YMCA has a variety of fitness activities, including swimming, aqua aerobics, cardio, weights, group power classes, and booty yoga. There's over 100 classes to choose from. The YMCA is so much more than a gym. The Y is a community. Join the YMCA. 246-YMCA or go online to sfymca.org.
This is the best of Battlefield Expressions.
You're listening to Battlefield Expressions, and that song is called We Remember, obviously, but if you ever have a chance to go on YouTube and watch that video on YouTube, it shows, you hear all those aircraft engines flying, those radial engines, those jet engines, and it just shows the aircraft that are flying and the different missions that they flew on, and it shows the pilots that are there. It's just, it's a very moving, very touching, but it's very honorable video. And John, we played that for you in remembrance of you know, your B-26 crews and flying over there in Korea and flying those aircraft. And you know, they call the Korean War the Forgotten War, but we don't forget the war. We honor you, and we honor your other Korean War veterans who served our nation during that time frame right after World War II. You know, one of the aircraft that we have in the museum collection is the B-54 Canberra bomber, and it was one of the first times that the United States had to buy aircraft outside of the United States. So we bought 472 Canberra bombers in 1949, 1950, because all of the aircraft manufacturers and all of the companies had been shut down. All of the aircraft facilities had been shut down. We did not have any new jet technology, and we did not have any medium bombers. It was right there at the beginning of the atomic age. And so we contracted with England for the Canberra bomber. England designed it and was built in Canberra, Australia. And then we received those. First time the United States had ever bought foreign aircraft for our fleets of aircraft. And so the Canberra bomber that we have is out there at the airport. If you've ever seen it out by the Federal Express building, that's going to be one of our first aircraft. It was used by NASA. And it was also used by the CIA as a spy plane in the late 50s, early 60s. But when it was first designed, it was a Cold War bomber, carried atomic bombs during the first part of the Cold War from Korea into the Cold War with Russia. And so we're very pleased and fortunate to have that as part of the museum collection. And it's 65 feet wide by 65 feet long. It was the predecessor to the U-2 spy plane. And so we're very fortunate to have that as part of our collection also. So thank you again, John. We were talking about you just gotten out of the Air Force, and we were talking about you had just started working at World Airlines, and you were a mechanic for World and for Alaska, but you were also an inspector, and you said that you had to fly every aircraft that had been worked on. That's a lot of flying hours.
I was required to fly every test top out of heavy maintenance.
And you said some of those were, you flew the aircraft that are flying at that time were the older jets. I mean, the 707, the 727, the DC-9s, the 747, or first model, first generation 747s. That's a lot of aircraft coming off the runway.
We had 200-200 747s, and we got a lot of DC-10s, DC-1030s.
those early jets were really, really kerosene burners. I mean, when they took off, they left large black jet streams of kerosene smoke coming out of the back of them, almost like the F-4 Phantom. I mean, it would, you could see it coming from the smoke that was behind it because of those kerosene burners like that. So what are some of the experiences? How many hours do you think that you flew when you were flying with American or Alaska Airlines?
Oh, God, I couldn't even tell. But,
I mean, thousands of hours.
It was probably 4 hours every time we did a test stop. So that was we'd probably do one every 2 or 3 months.
Well, you flew you retired from Alaska Airlines.
Yeah, I did 10 years with them.
And then you flew all over. I mean, you were stationed all over the world with, was it Alaska or World Airlines?
Well, I flew around with World mainly. I made about 3 trips around the world with World.
Wow. So when you went out and did your, I mean, you were testing aircraft literally all over the world.
Well, not really testing them. They'd sent me over to, because I was inspection supervisor. There was bases in England, around London and south of London, that did maintenance on our 727s. And they'd sent me over to watch the check, to inspect the paperwork and everything, and did a lot of that. And then I went to Jakarta, Indonesia for 2 months, 1 year, and then I went to, I spent about almost 2 years in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia.
Wow.
Malaysian Airlines did a heavy check on a DC-10 over there, and we had to cover that. And then we covered Hajj trips, where they flew the pilgrims. They had to go to Mecca once a year in their life. So all these old people would go at least once in their life. And they would fly about 20 days, and we'd have about 10 days in between, a hiatus, they call it, and then they would fly them all back after that.
Well, that was quite an experience being in all those different locations around the world. That's almost like being deployed in the military.
Yeah.
Hey, we're coming up on another break. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. We'll be right back.
Explore your world right from home with Turtle Bay TV.
Daintree is a jungle carpet python.
Featuring free educational and distance learning content for a virtual experience the whole family will enjoy.
Welcome to the vault.
Start streaming now at turtlebay.org.
Each year, millions of older adults suffer injuries from a fall. 1 out of 5 falls results in serious injuries such as broken bone, head injuries, or death. Many falls are preventable. PSA 2 Area Agency on Aging announces the Dignity at Home Fall Prevention Program, funded by the California Department of Aging. This no-cost program's mission is to reduce the number of debilitating falls suffered at home by older adults and persons with disabilities. If you are 60 and older, or persons with disabilities of any age that meet the income criteria, and are at risk of falling or being institutionalized, this program may be able to help. The Dignity at Home Fall Prevention Program was established for the purpose of reducing the number of debilitating falls suffered by older adults and persons with disabilities, thus enabling older adults and persons with disabilities to live independently and safely in their home environment for as long as possible. Contact PSA 2 Area Agency on Aging at 842-1687. That's 842-1687 to find out how this no-cost program may help.
This is the best of Battlefield Expressions.
that this heart of mine embraces all day through. In everything that's light and gay, I'll always think of you that way. I'll find you in the morning sun, and when the night is new, I'll be looking at the moon, but I'll be seeing you.
You're listening to Battlefield Expressions, and I played that song for my mom, who's a World War II spouse. You know, she's still alive, she's still doing well at 94, and so mom, shout out to listen, played that for you. She always used to talk about those wonderful World War II songs when she was waiting for my dad to come back. They pen-palled all through the war, and then married as soon as he returned. And so that was sent out to my mom, Florence Burroughs. She also worked for the United States Navy during the war. During that time, she was a civilian. She worked as a contractor with the Navy. And she worked in at Rough and Ready Island down in Central California, just outside of Sacramento there in Stockton. And they refitted ships to go back out to war after they came back in and had battle damage. So once again, John, that song kind of applies to you too, because we were talking about you being with the different airlines and being stationed all over the world, coming and going. You, a lot of the different aircraft during that time frame you were attached to or working with were military contracts and things like that. Tell us a little bit more. You're naming off all these countries around the world where you had been flying into. It's pretty unique and interesting about what you're doing. So you talked about Hawaiian Airlines. You worked for Hawaiian Airlines.
Oh, yeah.
And then being in England. And
yeah, Hawaiian started a charter out of San Francisco, and we had a DC-8. The first year I was there, I maintained it. I was the only one that maintained it. I could hire a couple of mechanics to help me, but I maintained that. It would fly, like Saturday morning, it would fly to Honolulu and come back Sunday night and sit in San Francisco all week. So then I'd maintain it, change the tires and all kinds of stuff. Then the second year, they got an Lockheed L-1011, and it was so big that we had TWA do the maintenance on it, and then I would just release it when they were through. And we flew that around the world. I went to London with it, stayed all night, and then went to Paris. I stayed a week in Paris with the crew. And I went to Jamaica with it and a few other places.
New Zealand, you said?
Yeah. Stayed all night in Christchurch.
So you really were a world traveler with those aircraft. Yeah. Do you ever have any emergency situations within those aircraft that have been worked on that you're doing flight checks?
Well, we had a DC-8. We had some military charters, and I think that was the one we went to New Zealand with. And we had a fuel valve that wasn't working. I think it was on the right outer wing. It wouldn't fill up. So when we took off from New Zealand, the airplane...
It yawed to the left.
And,
well, there's probably 400 or 500 gallons at 8 pounds a gallon.
Oh, yeah.
That weren't in the tip of that aircraft. I mean,
slowly rolled up to the left. It was a little scary.
Good thing the pilot was able to get some altitude and keep it in the air.
Yeah.
So, did they continue the flight or did you bring it back in and land it?
No, we came on home.
So, you went ahead and burned all the fuel out of the other wingtip?
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's amazing to me, and that would be an attribute to you in the industry, that as many aircraft take off and land and as many different types of aircraft through the years that there have been, that there have not been more fatalities or accidents in the air.
Yeah.
You as a flight inspector, flight check inspector verifying the repairs. I mean, there's so many mechanical parts, especially in the turbines themselves, and then everything else that's mechanical working on the aircraft. And so, and it's like you said, we were talking about parts that wear out fast. You were talking about all of the wing parts and bearings that Boeing put in their aircraft in the MD-80 that wore out within a year.
737s.
And, yeah, whereas other aircraft, they lasted forever. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, that's a – when bearings fail, I mean, it's either lubrication or because it's defective chromium on the outside of the ball bearings. I mean, it's just – you know, it's one or the other. But if you're not watching for that, if you're not inspecting for it, you know, that could be a fatality at 40,000 feet.
They were wearing out in a year. Come into the hangar after a year and be shaken.
Oh, so that, they were so loose, they were getting vibration at altitude.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's just amazing on those items.
I had one narrow escape when I was with World. We had I forgot what airline it was. We did a heavy maintenance on it, and the fuel gauges were calibrated in liters instead of pounds. Everything else we worked on was pounds. So when they went on a test hop, my manager wanted to take it, so I stayed there at the hangar. And when they come back, they hadn't fueled it right, and they were on fumes.
Holy mackerel. Because
they got it back.
Less fuel with liters than there are with gallons.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's a tragic mistake right there.
Thought they had a lot of fuel, and they're on fumes.
Yeah, you don't make that mistake very many times.
No.
And then it's the last mistake you make that way. So did they get that problem fixed?
Yeah.
I mean,
they left, but they left it in liters because they knew that's where they wanted it, but that was a scary for a test out.
Well, you would think that when the pilot looked at the fuel log, that he would see how many gallons or liters that were loaded for him to be able to interpolate, you know, what that was. I mean, that's one of the reasons that pilots are supposed to be responsible for checking their fuel.
Yeah, I don't remember if it was World's pilots or whether it was the pilots from that owned airline.
Wow. Yeah. That's how critical mistakes can become.
Yeah.
Just like that. Well, let's transfer past that. Let's talk about now that, you know, you've been, when you came back and you, when was it that you joined the Korean War Veterans here in Shasta County?
I'd heard about it. I saw it in the paper or something, for several years, but then, I don't know how I really got involved in it. I found out where there was a meeting down at the VFW Hall in Anderson, and I went down there and joined. And I guess I was there about a year, and there was that's when the state wanted all these different organizations pay taxes. So the guy that was treasurer ahead of me, it took him about a year to get it all straightened out because they hadn't been paying taxes for 5 years or more. They hadn't even filed anything.
Wow.
And he talked me into taking treasurer, and he bailed out.
Said, I'm out of here.
I'm working on my ninth year now.
9 years. So tell us a little bit about the Korean War veterans. I mean, how many? I know you've got veterans that are that you're losing all the time because of age and sickness, different things like that. But you have in your organization, because I've had the opportunity to speak on several occasions to the Korean War veterans group. You have everybody in there. You have the Army and the Marine Corps. You have Seabees in there.
Yeah.
You have women veterans, women Marines, women Army, women Air Force, Army Air Corps. You have a wide variety of Korean War veterans that live in this community that are part of that organization. Yeah.
There's a lot more that we could get, but they just, you know, younger guys don't want to join. The way it started out, it was everybody that was there during the war from 1950 to 53, then they decided to hire or bring in veterans that weren't actually in Korea but were in during the war. So we got a lot of those. And but now they never did end the war over there, so anybody that's over there now, even up to today, could join our chapter if they wanted to. There's still a war, actually.
Right, and there's so many, actually probably more Army veterans than not, that have served in Korea. I know the Seabees go there all the time and do humanitarian projects and things like that along the DMZ and for the different communities.
Yeah, I see people with Korean War hats, you know, around town a lot, but they're not, you don't join them, our club.
So we're going to do a shout-out. If you're a Korean War veteran and you'd like to be a part of this organization for the Korean War veterans with other Korean War veterans, even if you're younger, you need to step up to the plate and start taking over some of the responsibility, because as we lose some of our older veterans, we need younger veterans to step in and take that place. We're coming up on a break right now. We're going to take a break. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. Our guest is John Baker, United States Air Force, Korean War. We'll be right back.
The YMCA is welcoming new members to come and enjoy the many choices the YMCA has to offer. The YMCA has a variety of fitness activities, including swimming, aqua aerobics, cardio, weights, group power classes, and booty yoga. There's over 100 classes to choose from. The YMCA is so much more than a gym. The Y is a community. Join the YMCA. 246-YMCA or go online to sfymca.org.
Treat your sweetheart to a special Valentine where you both get lucky. Make your date night reservations at Wind River Resort and Casino for our Valentine's weekend special from February 11th through the 13th. Choose your appetizer, entree, and dessert. Crab cakes, T-bone steak, five-layer chocolate cake, and more. Only $75 a couple. With your River Club card. After dinner, play your favorite slot machine on us with included free slot play. Call 1-800-YOU-WIN or visit WinRiver.com. Find your moment at the river.
There's more to explore with a Turtle Bay membership. Get unlimited access to world-class exhibits, exciting animal shows, towering playgrounds, and beyond. Family memberships are only $90 a year. That's less than $8 a month for a whole year of fun. Join today at turtlebay.org.
Plan for a whole Valentine's weekend with special entrees served all weekend long at Black Bear Diner. That's right, from Friday through Monday, February 12th through the 14th, bring your special date or the whole family for a sweet meal. Choose choice New York steak with hollandaise sauce and sautéed mushrooms, a light-grilled salmon with lemon butter cream sauce, or a slow roasted prime rib. Be sure to top it off with a slice of limited time lemon drop cheesecake. Make your Valentine's weekend very special. Black Bear Diner, 2605 Hilltop Drive.
Black Bear Diner.
At Shasta Regional Medical Group, we're focused on the health matters that matter to you, like having a primary care doctor you trust. Our physicians put patients first. They take the time to listen to your needs and concerns, and they provide the information you need to make good decisions about your own health. At Shasta Regional Medical Group, you have an integrated network of caregivers and specialists working to serve you in a compassionate, patient-centered environment. We're conveniently located right across the street from Shasta Regional Medical Center. To make an appointment, call Shasta Regional Medical Group today at 605-4260 or visit us online at ShastaRegionalMedicalGroup.com. Shasta Regional Medical Group. Your primary care is our primary concern.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearm Destruction. Obtaining a California concealed weapons license will allow the licensed individual to transport a listed handgun in their vehicle or on their person in public. For application instructions, training, and other information, contact NFI at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and remember, it's our right and our responsibility.
This is the best of Battlefield Expressions.
America is always a fool. America is always a fool.
Happy birthday, United States Navy, coming up October 13th. That's Wednesday of this next week, and that goes out to all of our Navy veterans. To say thank you to them for their service and to wish the United States Navy a happy birthday. Our guest this morning is John Baker, the United States Air Force, our Korean War veteran. And, John, I just wanted to say thank you. We've got our last few minutes here coming up on the program. I could never say thank you to our veterans enough who serve, who set that example before us. I want to say thank you personally for me because as you've been a part of the museum and you've worked with the museum over since 2009, you have been a vital and a key part of bringing it together. You've worked on all of our different projects. You've helped put our libraries together. You've helped build everything up out at the airport and take everything down when we lost our lease, when we had to leave. And then you've been there in Anderson as we put everything back together again and we put our offices together in the archive. And you've just been a trooper. You've been a hard worker. You've been, like I said, you've been a mentor to me. You don't say a lot, but you're a big example. And sometimes, you know, a person's example is greater than any words that they can say. And you outwork me on many occasions. You're right there working hard with me with all the different projects, whether it's painting or pouring concrete or digging out rock like we did with the well this last week or hanging tin around our well house because we part of our well house burned up with that fire back in March. And so we rebuilt the well house with tin siding to make sure that it was fire resistant. And you just, you don't say a lot, but you're there and you just keep pressing forward. And that's a great example to me. And so I thank you for that. And I know that our other board members feel the same way. You know, you're consistent and we appreciate that consistency. But, you know, you've been a good friend and I appreciate that also. You don't always get a chance to say thank you to people around you. But I think it's so important that we do stop and we say thank you and we show the appreciation, for things that people do around us. Military with military, there's an appreciation there. Yeah. And, you know, as one military member sets the example, you don't have to say anything. You just know there's a camaraderie there. And it doesn't matter whether it's young to old or old to young. There's lessons to be learned. There's opportunities to be enjoyed. And like I said, when it comes to the museum, you've been there and you've been a key part of everything that we've been doing. And I look forward to working with you for many more years to come. What are you now, John? Are you 89?
I'll be 89 February.
89 in February. Up. So you got a birthday coming up a couple months away from here.
4 months.
So, you know, I want to say happy birthday early to you, John. And
I'll make it.
you'll make it. I have no doubt. You probably outlive the rest of us. And so, because you're just that kind of, you've got the tenacity to just keep on going. I know you've had some sicknesses here and there. We tried to have you here on the air several different times, but, you're feeling really good right now. And so we're taking advantage of that and having it in here, especially since you and I were out there sweating our butts off this last week, getting that well ready to go. And that's another keystone, another milestone for the museum and for all those who work hard to make this happen. I wanted to bring up a couple of dates here real quick that are really important. If you're not aware of it, we're going to be doing our Christmas for the Troops program again, and that's going to be December 4th. That'll be at the Anderson VFW, and that will be from 1 in the afternoon till 6 in the evening. And we haven't announced what kind of meal we're going to be having, but we'll be having a meal. It's a $5 donation. That helps offset the cost of the food and also helps offset the cost of the shipping. The packages have gone up again this year. The U.S. Postal Service, we can only ship overseas through the U.S. Postal Service. And our normal box that we generally use, the large box, is like $23 right now to ship a box. And so, last year it cost us $8,000 to ship boxes overseas. So we can't ship the box if we don't have the money for shipping, but then we can't ship the box if we don't have items to put in the box. So we're probably going to downsize the box so we're not paying so much for shipping. But we definitely need your donations out there. If you're listening, we'd like to have you donate non-perishable items for the troops as we get ready to move forward and we get ready to ship these boxes. It's taken twice as long now to ship items overseas. That's why we're doing our program December 4th. And we want to be able to make sure that we can get those items into the boxes and get those shipped out so that we can go ahead and try to get them to the troops that are overseas before Christmas, if possible. And so if you have a family member that is serving, whether they're in the United States or they're overseas and are not going to be home, we'd like to request you to get that address to us so that we can go ahead and ship a box to them, say thank you from our community and thank you from those family members and things like that that want to say thank you. We're looking for cards. We're also looking, when you go out for and buy Halloween candy, buy an extra bag for the troops. Buy an extra bag of candy for our military personnel, and you'll be able to drop them off at that evening at the event on December 4th, or you can drop them off at the museum offices. Let me give you the phone number for the museum office. The office number is 378-2280, 378-2280, or you can also drop them off at the Cottonwood Firehouse down in Cottonwood, the old historic Cottonwood Firehouse at 3271 Brush Street. And so we are in and out. We're bouncing around, taking care of all these wonderful and great things that are happening in our community. And once again, these things don't happen without our volunteers. And so, John, you have been one of those greatest volunteers that have worked and supported the museum. We're coming up on our last few minutes. Is there anything else that you'd like to say about either the Korean War veterans or your career with the Air Force in Korea?
I have some pictures of the military cemetery when they first built it there. Now it's a pretty big deal. They have a big ceremony there every year now.
What town is that in?
It's Busan.
Busan.
Right out of near the K-9 Air Force Base.
And then recently the Korean government issued medals to all the Korean War veterans.
Yeah, it was actually we got two because one, about 5 years ago, we got one from a general. And then the last one was from the Korean government, I guess. But they're made out of the expanded ammo. The metal is
the brass. Yeah. The brass from the shells.
Yeah.
Wow, I didn't realize that was the brass that was left there from because there were so many artillery shells that were left there.
Yeah.
I mean, how many ashtrays can you make? Well, we're coming up on the end of our program here, John. Once again, thank you for your service to our country. Thank you to your service to our community. And, you've been involved, like I said, with the museum, with all the different programs, and you've been a key player since the very beginning as we started out. And so that is one of the things that I appreciate the most is when you show up and you be a part of all those different things that we're doing. John Baker's name is written all over everything inside the Veterans Museum. And if it's not written with his name, it's written with his hard sweat and tenacity and hard work that he's done. And there isn't a whole lot of things that we've done in there that you haven't been a part of. And so as we move forward, we're going to put together most of the larger items that we have right now are Korean War era items. And when, like the M53 or M37 Korean War truck that we just rebuilt, we're in the process of putting it back together again. It's in the firehouse and full restoration, body off frame. And it is going to be a beautiful piece. Yeah. And we're still working on putting it back together again. But those are items that are a tribute to our Korean War veterans. And just one more way for us to say thank you and to remember to make sure that we have these items. When they're gone, they're gone.
You got to find those pictures that I gave Christine. She's stored them away somewhere.
Well, I'm sure that they're in one of those
8x10
boxes
pictures
upstairs in the archive. So we'll have to go through and see if we can find out which ones those are. Thank you again, John, for being here. John Baker, Korean War veteran, United States Air Force, vital member of the Northern California Veterans Museum. Thank you, John.
You're welcome.
Happiness ain't out of reach. Hard work pays off the way it should. Yeah, I've seen enough to know that we've got it good. Where the stars and stripes and the eagle fly.
KCNR, Shasta, Redding.